Orb, Volume 1, Number 4. Faith. Hello, welcome to The Orb. My name is Reed Hart. In the previous episode, I said I'd focus on faith this time. This arose when I wondered why faith is less successful at alleviating our culture of fear. I speculated that the dogma created by organized religion contributes to the culture of fear, a fear of damnation in particular. That's not what religion is supposed to be about. Consider the firestorm over the book Love Wins by the evangelical pastor Rob Bell. In it he states, quote, "It's been clearly communicated to many that this belief in hell as conscious eternal torment is a central truth of the Christian faith, and to reject it is, in essence, to reject Jesus. This is misguided and toxic and ultimately subverts the contagious spread of Jesus' message of love, peace, forgiveness, and joy that our world desperately needs to hear," unquote. Bell said he wrote the book because the Christian message that God is love seems to have gotten lost. Quote, "I kept meeting religious people who were incredibly dogmatic about heaven and hell when you die, but didn't seem to care about the fact that 800 million people will go to bed hungry tonight," unquote. He said that what he called evacuation theology, or the idea that Jesus is your ticket to somewhere else, is dangerous because it can cause people to miss Christ's message about how to live in such harmony with God that you are creating a heaven on earth. Quote, "Jesus taught his disciples to pray not, God beam me up, but thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven," unquote. He says hell is something freely chosen that already exists on earth. Even before the book was published, religious leaders and their followers were variously branding it heresy, hailing it as a breakthrough, or saying it was somewhere in between. The controversy exists because divine will is not a truth that can be proven or disproven. Bertrand Russell wrote an unpublished essay, Is There a God? In it, he offers an example of how inappropriate it is to demand agreement with beliefs that cannot be disproven. If I state there is a teapot orbiting the sun, undetectable, somewhere between the orbits of the Earth and Mars, nobody can disprove this. If I were to then demand that, however unlikely this fact, since you cannot disprove it, you must accept it as true without doubt, you would consider me barking mad. On the other hand, if such a teapot were documented in ancient books and taught as sacred truth every Sunday, or taught to children in schools, then refusal to believe becomes subject to the Inquisition.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition! Cardinal Fang! Fetch the comfy chair!
Ah, television, the source of all wisdom. There was a television series that ran from 1969 to 1972 called The Courtship of Eddie's Father. I didn't watch it regularly, and the only thing I remember is one piece of dialogue. At the end of each episode, Eddie would ask his father a question, and his father would answer. The question was, "What is truth?" The answer was, "Truth is something that never changes." The truths we hold are often less stable. Some we hold on faith, others we hold on trust, yet we believe in them all the same. Faith is historically tied to religion and spiritualism. The connection to religious belief brings with it belief in the mythologies and dogma that go with a particular religion. In common English usage, faith is widely interchanged with trust and belief. I can say that I believe the sun will rise tomorrow. Few would question my belief, although the root of that belief may be either a trust in the physics of celestial mechanics or a faith that a divine power will keep the world running for another day. By using the word believe, you cannot discern which of the two is the basis of belief. We can say we have faith in our currency and the banking system. Without our belief in their soundness, our banks would collapse. There is no invocation of the divine in this statement. Well, Satan, perhaps, but we can talk about banking another day. If anything, We choose the word faith in a statement like this to suggest a belief that is less firmly grounded in evidence. The notion that faith stands apart from reason has, in a scientific age, placed faith at some lesser form of belief than that supported by empirical evidence. Yet trust starts with faith. I have a daughter. How far do I trust her? In my case, pretty far. Through her behavior, she's earned my trust. But it started with me lending a little trust based on nothing but faith. When that trust was kept, she earned more. Can one have faith in science? I think we started there. As the scientific method demonstrated success over time, it earned more of our trust. What these examples illustrate is that the distinction between faith and trust is in the strength of evidence that supports a rational case for the underlying truth. Until we establish firm evidence, we show faith in the truth of something. As the evidence mounts, that faith turns to trust.
Will cease to exist. Trust in me, just in me. Close your eyes and trust in me. Close your eyes. Trust in me.
The validity, the believability of faith and trust covers a wide spectrum. At one end, there is logical positivism that holds that faith has no place in knowing truth. At the other end is the belief that the truths that matter, philosophical, moral truths, can only be known by faith. I've been considering what distinguishes faith from trust for me and have settled on something pretty unconventional. Faith is a belief that comes to you, unbidden and sometimes unwelcome. It is a truth of which you cannot explain the source. You just know it deep in your being. Love is like that. Faithful. Trust is a choice, a truth that you have the power to embrace or reject. Things you can explain and convince others to believe are truths you trust. Neither is more or less true. They're both just beliefs. You've seen The Matrix.
This isn't real.
What is real? How do you define real? If you're talking about what you can feel, what you can smell, what you can taste and see, then real is simply electrical signals interpreted by your brain.
Truth is just as evasive. When someone holds a belief that is based in faith, they cannot be moved to change that belief, nor are they likely to convince another to hold that belief. Faith comes on its own terms. It cannot be willed into existence. When someone suffers an injury or loss, when bad things happen to good people, some look for a rationale to help them cope. Many wish for faith to come to them and comfort them with a belief that all serves a higher purpose. That belief cannot be willed into existence. Faith is not something you can choose to have or reject. Or is it? There are some in the evangelical community that tell you that you need only accept Jesus as your personal Savior. Make that choice, and faith is yours. As discussed in the first episode of The Orb, people seek meaning and purpose in life. The hunger can drive us to seek comfort in religion, to hold faith in a greater power, the divine. They may end up accepting something as faith that may not be remotely divine. It still serves the purpose for them. It comforts them. It gives them strength of purpose. This is no less valuable, whether legitimately divine or entirely secular, even fraudulent.
Trust in me, just in me.
If you can, look into the 1973 Academy Award-winning documentary, Marjo. The tagline was, "You keep the faith, Marjo keeps the money." My definition of faith as a belief held without choice does not require a deity. Consider the 2011 documentary Kumare, a true film about a false prophet. An American filmmaker named Vikram Gandhi transformed himself into Kumare, a guru from a fictional place called Ali Kash. He did this as a social experiment. Concealing his true identity from all he meets, Kumare forges profound spiritual connections with real people from all walks of life.
A few years ago, I decided to make a documentary on spiritual leaders in America, and I realized that the one thing they all had in common was that people believed in them, and that was the only real thing I saw in common with everyone. So I thought, what if I just tried to do this myself? Wouldn't that prove that, you know, a lot of what we see in spiritual leaders and religious leaders was just coming from ourselves? We wanted to see how people reacted to Kumare, and we went to Arizona and started a following of people, a spiritual following, and documented the whole thing.
I definitely believe that at any given time on the earth, there are at least one, if not a couple of, you know, prophets.
I sensed a presence, like a really gentle, wonderful, whispering presence.
I have this image in my head of what this perfect, simple man is like, because that's the kind of person that I want to be.
I don't even think we really had to tell him what was wrong or what we needed to change. I think he already knew.
I can say that my life has changed, and when I'll look back on that point in time, I'll know that it was because of my relationship with Kumare.
We had an obligation to the people that were in the film that didn't know that Kumare was actually Vikram, and that he was an American putting on an accent and putting on different clothing. So we took the responsibility to them very seriously, and wanted to make sure that, because we were asking people to, you know, spend time with this guru and have interactions with him, that those would be valuable, and they would, in the end, when maybe they learned that he was actually an American, still be like, you know what, that's okay, because I had a good time with Kumare.
Over the course of, you know, making this film, we realized that the heart of what everyone's looking for is what we were after. And, you know, I think that's what people are looking for anyway. when they turned to gurus, and we were kind of searching for the same thing in the process. So, you know, I definitely feel like it went from a place of possibly going to having a skeptical opinion, a cynical opinion about faith and religion, to something that's reaffirming and totally a positive message about it. And I think overall we're, you know, more accepting of the idea that everybody can believe in whatever they want to believe in, even if I don't get it.
The message of the film is that all belief comes from within. The selection of a spiritual leader, whether an individual guru or an institutional church, is a choice we make to satisfy our hunger for a larger meaning in life. So now, do I have to concede that faith can be a choice? Not really. We often ask someone to take a leap of faith. What we're asking is that someone choose to lend trust, in the expectation that that trust will not be betrayed, that the trust will eventually be earned. The people who chose to follow Kumare were placing their trust in him to satisfy a spiritual hunger. This connection to the guru is not faith. They experienced something that satisfied the hunger and chose to trust it and follow it. Faith runs much deeper. Faith is what tells you that you have a spirit that can be hungry. This is something you feel from within that you can neither will into existence nor will away. Your belief in your spiritual self is not a choice. Where you have choice is in how you nurture that spirit. I know I'm asking a lot, but if we assume that my definition of faith and trust are viable, where does that put church dogma? I posit that people's so-called faith in the teaching of their church, and more importantly, their passionate defense of those teachings, are actually tied to their own individual identity. In Volume 1, Number 2 of The Orb, I spoke of how we defend the investment that we have in our identity. If we have rooted our identity in a church, we defend that church for our very lives. Literally, many wars have been and continue to be fought over it. Going back to the varied responses to Rob Bell's book, Love Wins, the choices different people have made in their investment in dogma governs their response. Where they invest in the church's testament of love, they embrace the book. Where they invest in the promise of salvation, they denounce the book. Consider the wording of the Simplified Catechism of the Catholic Church. Quote, "By faith we believe in God, in all that he has revealed, and in all that the church proposes for our belief. Faith leads to a total committal." Unquote. The institution is demanding its followers give total commitment to whatever the church proposes they believe.
Trust in me.
I find that pretty creepy.
Just in me.
As I believe that investment of identity in a particular church is a choice, I can reject that church. In many cases, the choice of one's religion has been made for them by family history and upbringing. Yet it is still a choice, and we can change it later in life. Many do. That you have faith that your spiritual self exists does not bind you to a mode of behavior, nor to a legacy of church teachings. These are choices you make that meet a need for you. It is not anyone else's place to make you wrong for those choices. Where conflict arises is when someone is trying to fault another's choice. Where the conflicts fester the most is where the subject matter crosses from religious stories, what might be classed as mythologies, and secular science, what might be classed as theories. Note that neither has a lock on truth, only on belief. The teaching of creationism is a powerful example. On the subject of the origin of the world, the secular side has chosen to trust science. The religious side has chosen to trust church dogma. So which is true? We simply can't tell. I'll confess, as I did last episode, that I chose to trust science, in the understanding that it is theory, and fundamentally no more certain than myth. Why can't we agree to disagree on this? Most of the time we do. When the religious press to have their beliefs taught alongside secular science in public schools, things really heat up. Bobby Henderson, an Oregon State University physics graduate, wrote a letter to the Kansas State Board of Education advocating against teaching intelligent design in biology classes. In that letter, he first wrote of an alternative creator, the flying spaghetti monster. His intent was not to diminish the belief of the Christian advocates of intelligent design, but rather to illustrate that a movement that uses ambiguous references to a designer must accept that any conceivable entity may fulfill that role, including a flying spaghetti monster. The choice of designer is exactly that, a choice. However, the selection of such a ridiculous prime mover is not harmless. I spoke with a good friend and member of the Orb, Mike Leach.
When confronted with the flying spaghetti monster concept by a friend, my first gut response was I felt insulted. Personally, and also when you consider, that if you have any concerns for society in improving itself and becoming better, I was insulted with respect to that concept as well. It doesn't help out. I thought that the spaghetti monster trivializes the problems that people have and the reasons why they need religion.
The flying spaghetti monster as the prime mover, the creator, the intelligent designer, versus God in that role as the intelligent designer. And you find that the flying spaghetti monster is such a whimsical image of God as to be an insult to another image of God.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What is your image of God?
My image of God is something that originated all of the goodness in human society. When you're faced with the choice of doing some good or bad, humans generally have an inclination to do something good. Where does that come from? What part of us is from that? That's what God is. God is the essence of that piece of us that we all share, that's throughout, existence. It's not a trivial thing.
Both faith and trust can coexist. I have faith in some things in which I would be unable to convince another to believe. I can trust in the truth of some things in which someone could persuade me to change my belief. My point here is that both faith and trust are tied to belief, not necessarily to truth. The righteousness of one's beliefs should not lead to the condemnation or ridicule of another's. That is just cruelty. Choices of a belief in church dogma are often at the heart of how societies are governed. Religion can teach political engagement or disengagement. For some, everything that happens is because it is God's will. For some, the rewards of an afterlife arrive only through the grace of God. These beliefs mean that no political or social actions in this life are particularly important. Believers must simply meet their minimum obligations as citizens. Render unto Caesar. Do your duty under the law. Part of the challenge for political leaders is to overcome that quietism. For others, there are lessons that persecution is evidence of righteousness. For yet others, their view is to be optimistic even in the most hopeless of circumstances. No defeat is necessarily permanent, and no suffering is without redemptive possibility. God helps those that help themselves. The suggestion that it is the power of faith that drives a policy is misguided. It is the choice or rejection of a religious dogma that governs policy. Religious beliefs do set political agendas, and not always for the better. Girls are denied an education, and women are denied reproductive health care. Gay men are criminalized. Israel's self-righteousness is supported to help bring the conditions for the end times. There is inaction on global warming because man was given dominion over the earth and the end times are coming anyway. As much as I argued in the last episode that governments, including churches, use fear to take power from the people, they also exist because we believe in them. We believe in the fear. Rebecca Solnit wrote, "Stopping believing means no longer regarding those who rule you as legitimate, and so no longer fearing them or respecting them, and then, miraculously, they begin to crumble." Those beliefs are a choice. Political revolutions and religious reformations happen. Do we break faith? Do we choose to trust in something else? There is always hope. That will be next time in The Orb. Thank you. Orb is a listener-supported presentation of Cornoble Productions. New podcasts are released alternate Mondays at orbcast.ca or pick us up at iTunes. I'm Reed Hart.